Eustace! Eustace!
Oh, so you're here.
I only just arrived. Oh, Eustace, it was magnificent. I flew.
Oh, really?
Yes, for hours and hours it seemed. Though it was so soft and comfortable, it might have been less time. Or longer. Oh, I don't know. It was like a dream. And then I slowly came down and saw the ocean and the land and went through a cloud, which is how I got so wet. And then I saw this beautiful castle and this ship and I came down ever so gently in that thicket of trees over there. And, oh, Eustace, it was...
Oh, I do wish you'd stop jabbering on. I want to listen. The king's about to make a farewell speech, I think.
What king?
How many kings do you see? The old one there on the ship.
Jill looked towards the ship and found its splendour so great she had a difficult time finding the king. It was a tall ship, with high forecastle and high poop, gilded and crimson, with a great flag at the masthead, and many banners waving from the decks, and a row of shields, bright as silver, along the bulwarks. The gangplank was laid to her, and Jill saw, at the foot of it, the king. He was an old, old man. He wore a rich mantle of scarlet which opened in front to show his silver mail shirt. There was a thin circlet of gold on his head. His beard, white as wool, fell nearly to his waist. His eyes were watery, and he looked as if a puff of wind could blow him away.
He's making a farewell speech. Where is he going?
How am I supposed to know?
Is he the King of Narnia?
Oh, bother! Stop asking so many questions. I don't know. I'm not even certain that this is Narnia.
I thought you said you'd been here before.
Well, you thought wrong then.
But you told me!
For heaven's sake, dry up and let's hear what they're saying.
Jill turned to look again and noticed for the first time the people surrounding the king. If people is the right word, for only about one in every five was human. The rest were things you never see in our world. Fauns, satyrs, centaurs. And there were a lot of animals she knew well. Bears, badgers, moles, leopards, mice, and various birds. But then they were so very different from the animals which one called by the same names in England. Some of them were much bigger. The mice, for instance, stood on their hind legs and were over 2 feet high. But apart from their size, you could see by the expression in their faces that they could talk and think just as well as you could. And there were dwarfs, too. One in particular was next to the king, sitting in a little chair on wheels, which was harnessed to a little donkey, not much bigger than a large retriever. The dwarf was as richly dressed as the king, but because of his fatness, and because he was sitting hunched up among cushions, the effect was quite different. It made him look like a shapeless little bundle of fur and silk and velvet. He was as old as the king, but more hale and hearty, with very keen eyes. His bare head, which was bald and extremely large, shone like a gigantic billiard ball in the sunset light. The king was speaking to him, but Jill couldn't hear what was said, and as far as she could make out, the dwarf made no answer, though he nodded and wagged his head a great deal. Then the king raised his voice and addressed everyone present, but his voice was so old and cracked that she could understand very little of his speech, especially since it was about people and places she'd never heard of. The courtiers around them appeared to be greatly moved. Handkerchiefs were got out. Sounds of sobbing were heard in every direction. Jill was about to ask Eustace if he understood what the king had said or recognized any of the names he'd mentioned, when she suddenly remembered the signs.
Eustace, quick!
Huh?
Do you see anyone you know?
What?
There isn't a moment to lose. Don't you see some old friend here? Because you've got to go and speak to him at once.
What are you talking about?
It's Aslan, the lion. Says you've got to. I've seen him. Aslan, I mean.
Oh, you have you?
He said the very first person you saw in Narnia would be an old friend. And you've got to speak to him at once.
Well, there's nobody here I've ever seen before.
The king stooped and kissed the dwarf on both cheeks, straightened himself, raised his right hand as if in blessing, and went slowly and with feeble steps up the gangway and on board the ship. The gangway was cast off, trumpets sounded, and the ship moved away from the quay.
Now, I wonder what that was all about.
Who are you two, if I may ask? There's something magic about you. I saw you arrive. You flew.
Oh, my name is Eustace, and this is Jill. Would you mind telling us where we are?
In the land of Narnia, at the king's castle of Caer Paravel.
Is that the king who just left on that ship?
Too true, too true. But now you must tell me how you flew.
We were sent here by Aslan.
Aslan! This is almost too much for me. So early in the evening, I'm not quite myself till the sun's down.
We've been sent to find the lost prince.
It's the first I've heard about it. What prince?
You better come and speak to the Lord Regent at once. That's him over there in the donkey carriage. Trumpkin the Dwarf. What to do?
Wait! What's the king's name?
Caspian the Tenth.
Caspian?
Lord Regent.
Hey! What's that?
Two strangers, my lord.
Rangers? What do you mean? I see two uncommonly grubby man-cubs. What do they want?
My name's Jill.
The girl's called Jill.
The girls are killed? I don't believe a word of it. What girls? Who killed them?
Nobody's been killed.
Who?
Nobody!
Belgian barnacles, you needn't shout. I'm not so deaf as all that. What do you mean by coming here to tell me that nobody's been killed? Why should anyone have been killed?
Better tell him I'm Eustace.
The boy's Eustace, my lord.
Useless? I dare say he is. Is that any reason for bringing him to court, eh?
Not useless. Eustace!
I tell you what, Master Glimfeather. When I was a young dwarf, there used to be talking beasts and birds in this country who really could talk. There wasn't all this mumbling and muttering and whispering. Wouldn't have been tolerated for a moment, not for a moment. Now, hold on while I get me trumpet. I know it's around here somewhere.
Trumpet?
It's as a hearing aid when he puts it to his ear. My brain's a bit clearer now. Don't say anything about the lost prince. I'll explain later. It wouldn't do. Wouldn't do.
There. Now, if you have anything sensible to say, Master Glimfeather, try and say it into the trumpet. Take a deep breath and don't attempt to speak too quickly.
These two have been sent by Aslan to visit the court of Narnia.
Manes and mandibles. Sent by the lion himself, eh? And from that other place beyond the world's end, eh?
Yes, my lord.
Son of Adam and daughter of Eve. Well, my dears, you are very heartily welcome. If the good king, my poor master, had not this very hour set sail for Seven Isles, he would have been glad of your coming. It would have brought back his youth to him for a moment. For a moment. And now, it is high time for supper. You shall tell me your business in full council tomorrow morning. Master Glimfeather, see that bedchambers and suitable clothes and all else are provided for these guests in the most honourable fashion. And Glimfeather, in your ear.
Yes, my lord.
See that they're properly washed. Gilbert.
Yes, my lord.
Take me back to the castle.
As you wish, my lord. Yeah! Come along now.
What do we do now, Eustace?
Follow Trumpkin to the castle, I suppose.
It's the thing to do. Thing to do.
Come in.
here you are at last. I've been trying to find you for ever so long.
I've had a bath. I see you have too. And don't you look odd in those Narnian clothes?
No more than you.
I say, Eustace, isn't it all simply too exciting and scrumptious for words?
Is that what you think it is? I wish to goodness we'd never come.
Why on earth?
I can't bear it, seeing the king, Caspian, a doddering old man like that. It's frightful.
Why?
Oh, you don't understand. Now that I come to think of it, you couldn't. I didn't tell you that this world has a different time from ours.
How do you mean?
The time you spend here doesn't take up any of our time. Do you see? I mean, however long we spend here, we shall still get back to school at the moment we left it.
That won't be much fun.
And when you're back in England, our world, you can't tell how time is going here. It might be any number of years in Narnia, while we're having just 1 year at home. The Pevenses explained it all to me, but like a fool I forgot about it. And now apparently it's been about 70 years, Narnian years, since I was here last. Do you see now? And I come back and I find Caspian, an old, old man.
Then the king was an old friend of yours.
I should jolly well think he was. About as good a friend as a chap could have. And last time he was only a few years older than me. And to see that old man with a white beard, and to remember Caspian as he was the morning we captured the Lone Islands, or in the fight with the sea serpent. Oh, it's frightful. It's worse than coming back and finding him dead.
It's far worse than you think. We missed the first sign.
What do you mean?
Aslan said, as soon as the boy Eustace sets foot in Narnia, he will meet an old and dear friend. He must greet that friend at once. If he does, you will both have good help. That was the first sign. There are three others, and they're all to help us find the lost prince. So you did see an old friend, just as Aslan said, and you ought to have gone and spoken to him at once. And now you haven't, and everything is going wrong from the beginning.
But how was I supposed to know?
If you'd only listened to me when I tried to tell you, we'd be all right.
Yes, and if you hadn't played the fool on the edge of that cliff and jolly nearly murdered me, well...
Murdered?
Yes, I said murder. Then we'd have come together and both known what to do.
Was he the first person you saw? You must have been here for hours before me. Are you sure you didn't see anyone else first?
I was only here about a minute before you. He must have blown you quicker than me, making up for lost time, the time you lost.
Don't be a beast, Eustace.
Oh,
hello. What's that?
It was the castle bell ringing for supper. Both had a good appetite by this time and were astounded by the splendour and lavishness of the meal. Each course came in with trumpeters and kettle drums. There were soups and seafood, venison and fowl, pies and ices and jellies and fruits and nuts and all manner of drinks. Even Eustace cheered up. Much later, when they were dragging themselves upstairs to bed, yawning their heads off, Jill said,
I bet we sleep well tonight.
Which just shows how little anyone knows what's going to happen to them next. For once Jill was back in her room and about to get undressed for bed, she was startled by a tap on the window.
What on earth is that? Oh, I hope they don't have giant moths in this country. Oh, it's a huge bird. But, oh, it's the owl. What are you doing at my window?
Hush, hush, don't make a noise. Now, are you two really in earnest about what you've got to do?
About the lost prince, you mean? Yes, we've got to be.
Good. Then there's no time to lose. You must get away from here at once. I'll go and wake the other human, then I'll come back for you. You better change those court clothes and put on something you can travel in. I'll be back in tutus.
But where are we going?